WTKN Talk Radio.
You're invited to participate in a learning experience as you join us right here on Talk Radio. You'll meet new and interesting people. You'll hear fresh and stimulating ideas. You'll be a part of what Talk Radio is all about. Talk Radio is...
Owen Spann!
Well, a week from Sunday, Kurt Waldheim probably will be elected president of Austria. What's been happening lately? Today, Christian Science Monitor, copy of a document displayed last weekend in Geneva by the World Jewish Congress, contains charges. Waldheim killed hostages as a conscript lieutenant of the Balkans during the German army's brutal suppression of the Yugoslav partisans between 42 and 45. Recent article in Newsweek, April 5th, 1944, team of seven British commandos trying to raid an Aegean island. They were captured. There was an order to turn the prisoners over to the SD for special handling, the euphemism for execution. The victims never heard from again. The officer responsible for that signature, First Lieutenant Kurt Waldheim. 40 years, Waldheim lied about his military record, claiming he had been mustered out of Hitler's army after he was wounded on the Russian front in late 41. Newsweek again says it was revealed Waldheim served in Greece, Yugoslavia, from early 42 until the end of the war. The post-war Yugoslav government accused him of war crimes, but it did not press the charge. He retreated in disarray, changing history as new facts emerged. First, he said he'd been nothing more than an interpreter. Then he claimed his intelligence work was mere paper shuffling. Waldheim insisted he knew nothing about many of the atrocities that occurred around him in the Balkans. Now, the latest is we have several groups at odds. The World Jewish Congress is saying about this gentleman, he is a proven liar. He should be tried as a war criminal. You can understand that. But then a quote recently from Simon Wiesenthal, who is the famed Nazi hunter who lives in Vienna. He said he's an opportunist, yes, but not a proven war criminal. Not a proven war criminal. We have with us today Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations of the American Jewish Congress. Welcome. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Owen.
Were you surprised by Wiesenthal's almost defense of Waldheim?
Well, I don't think that Wiesenthal saw that as a defense of Waldheim. He called me, in fact, when he was last here this past month, half hour after he landed at the airport. He called me at my office, in effect, anticipated this latest comment that he made to the press. I think he speaks out of his situation in Vienna, Austria. He told me that with great emotion the Jews in Austria were in a panic over the rise in anti-Semitism. He said there was a torrent of hate mail. There were threats to the lives of many people, friends, relatives.
We're talking now, in shades of the 1940s then.
Well, this was 3-4 weeks ago. So that I think in part his greatest preoccupation at the moment was trying to assure that the charges do not get out of hand in a way that could lead to further destruction for the 8,000-9,000 elderly Jews who are left over in Austria. Let me deal with it in this way. The American Jewish Committee had a full-scale discussion a week ago in Washington of this of all of these issues. Our general position is that we support the role of the World Jewish Congress, whom we think performed a constructive service by bringing into open these charges against Kurt Waldheim. It is mind-boggling that the supreme international civil servant of all of the nations of the earth could for 40 years lie to all of the governments of the world about his role in the Nazi war machine. It raises some very serious questions as to the machinery of the United Nations and the loopholes that allows this sort of thing to happen. I think one of the problems that we face in the Jewish community, it's not the question that Wiesenthal raises directly, is this issue must not be allowed to go on as simply a question between the Jews or the World Jewish Congress. and Waldheim, the Jews and Austria, the Jews against the United Nations. At some point, the discussion must become, what is the responsibility of the leaders of the nations of the earth who allowed somebody so deeply enmeshed in the Nazi war machine to go on for this long period of time?
Even more troubling, a week from Sunday is the election. If Waldheim wins, and he's expected to win, world press could then say, aha, we told you, anti-Semitism has always been rampant in Austria, and all the publicity helped his campaign. If he should be defeated, then it would be the Jews who did it, right?
Right, that's the double bind.
It's a no-win situation.
That's the double bind, and I think that all of us would be better served if the United Nations itself recognize that it has a primary responsibility in dealing this issue and entering into it before the election were to take place. I have recommended some weeks ago, reported in the New York Times, that an international panel of recognized jurists be assembled to look at all the evidence and to hand down an impartial opinion. So it gets to be a judgment of the best legal minds that we could find, mostly of them, frankly, I would hope would be not Jewish, who would say this is an issue of the conscience of mankind. That at least would put the issue in some perspective and would not allow this to be seen solely as a Jewish concern, and it would also take into account the situation of exposed Jews in Austria.
Is there any doubt in your mind that indeed he will be elected president a week from Sunday?
My own personal view, it's not an official view, is that I think he will win probably by a smaller vote than is generally anticipated. It was, in fact, anticipated that in the first election results that he was going to win by a very substantial majority. The fact that he got 49.6% of the vote means that there are elements in Austria that are deeply upset by the knowledge of what Waldheim was about. You know, one of the things we need to recognize, and this may not be well taken even in the Jewish community, I've been talking with leaders of the Austrian government over the past several weeks in private conversations. They keep impressing on me that part of their anguish, and they're deeply upset over what is happening, is the fact that nearly two-thirds of the Austrian population was born either during the war or after the war. That is to say that probably 65% of the Austrian population today are younger people who had absolutely nothing to do
and don't even know
anything
about this until
this campaign
started.
Well, we're not involved in the Holocaust.
Let me take a break, and we're going to get right back. Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations of the American Jewish Congress.
I'm Owen Spann. This is Talk Radio AM 145. KPSI.
Fred was at his desk when he made the first call.
Hello, Bob? Well, I'm not sure. Hold on while I call Frank on my other phone.
Hold on while I call Frank on my other phone. The first fatal words.
Hello, Frank? Bob's on the other phone. What? Hold on, Frank. Bob, I gotta call Mert from the phone on the next desk.
Fred headed to the next desk. The course of events was irreversible.
Yeah, Mert, listen, Bob and Frank are on the other two phones here in my office.
Fred did have an alternative. AT&T Alliance Teleconferencing Service. All he had to do was pick up his touchtone phone and call 0700-456-1000 for a crystal clear conference call with 2 to 58 locations.
Frank, hold on. Mert, Frank, oh boy, I'm getting tangled up in all these phone calls.
With Alliance Teleconferencing Service, Fred could have had one conversation with everyone at the same time, and thus he could have prevented three separate cords from circling, coiling, and surrounding his neck until AT&T Alliance Teleconferencing Service.
Help me.
Simply pick up your touchtone phone and call 0700-456-1000. AT&T, the right choice.
Helen?
Yes?
Is that you?
It's me, but who are you?
It's Ed. Remember? You had a huge crush on me.
Oh, my gosh, you're that, Ed?
Oh, you look beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, you're the only one here it didn't take me 10 minutes to recognize. How do you have the nerve to come to a 25th reunion looking so young?
Well, I don't give out my secrets to just anyone. What was your name again?
Porcelana Medicated Fade Cream is the secret of thousands of beautiful women for helping get rid of age spots. Used twice a day, Porcelana can make spots hardly noticeable in about 6 weeks or so. There's even a sunscreen formula to help protect spots from the sun while it keeps on fading.
You know something? I can't get over how beautiful you look. Listen, Helen, I know it's short notice, but could you?
Sorry, Ed. I already have a date for the prom with my husband.
Porcelana twice a day when you're in the habit of looking young. Use only as directed.
Thank you.
A week from Sunday, the voters of Austria will elect a new president, probably Kurt Waldheim. Newsweek says the investigation of his wartime activities is still gaining momentum and will continue after the election on June 8th. The World Jewish Congress says he is a proven liar. He should be tried as a war criminal. Simon Wiesenthal, the famous Nazi hunter, says, opportunist, yes, but not a proven war criminal. Dr. Mark Tenenbaum with us, Director of International Relations of the American Jewish Committee. I'm going to open our phones. What do you think? The controversy has grown and grown and grown. There is also a bill before the Congress that would, in effect, bar President Waldheim from entering the United States. What are the ramifications? What should the world do, the United States do? Israel has been strangely quiet about this entire affair. Any questions or comments? Our phones are open. Here's how you call.
If you want to participate in the show today, dial 1-800-423-TALK. Once again, the toll-free number where you can reach me here on WWAM is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Owen Spann. This is WWAM 1450 News Talk Radio.
With Dr. Tenenbaum, talking about the Waldheim affair. If nothing else, there seems to be controversy on, is he a proven war criminal? Apparently, he is a proven liar. Is he not? I mean,
granted. Simon Wiesenthal agrees to. I think the issue is the extent of his involvement and the nature of his activity, and I think that's yet to be produced. Look, the key, the smoking gun is to be found in the files of the Yugoslav government. And why the Yugoslav government is not making available their internal memorandum, there is an internal memorandum which has not been released. They've released other materials. The internal memorandum was the judgment of the Yugoslav War Crimes Commission as to the exact nature of Waldheim's involvement or lack of involvement in the brutal attacks on the burning of villages in Yugoslavia and the attacks on the partisans in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia is thus far refused to make that information available, and they're trying to straddle the issue. Many people feel that Yugoslavia does not want to reopen the wartime period because they're afraid of what this will do to Yugoslav's national unity. They're afraid of pitting the Croatians against the Serbs again and bringing the government down, and therefore avoiding the issue.
Isn't Simon Wiesenthal also talking about, this is not doing us any good in Austria, bringing back this whole wave of anti-Semitism?
Well, I think that is a concern. I share with the World Jewish Congress that must not become the overwhelming concern. There's a fundamental moral issue to the conscience of the world. How it is possible for a man who is to be the supreme arbiter of the last best hope of mankind. I mean, this is the instrument for bringing about fundamental justice in the world. For such a man to be a Nazi means to make a mockery of everything the United Nations has stood for over the past 40 years. I understand from friends at the United Nations that UN General Secretary Perez de Cuellar is deeply upset over this, wants to find a way to deal with it. I know people who have been aides, assistants to Waldheim at the United Nations, who are appalled by what has happened, who feel betrayed by Waldheim. He lied to them personally. He presented himself as an anti-Nazi. They all want Waldheim brought to justice, not as a matter of vengeance. The Jews do not want this as a matter of vengeance. Israel does not want this as a matter of vengeance. What we want is a man must be held accountable. This must be a message to every future criminal, to every future Gaddafi, every future Idi Amin, that you can't go off and participate in the massacre of hundreds of thousands of people and feel that you can get away with it.
Why do I get the feeling, though, he will never be tried as a war criminal, that it would be too much of an embarrassment to the United Nations, to the world, that such a trial will never take place? I really get that feeling.
Well, there may not be a trial in the formal juridical sense of
as in Nuremberg
due process, but there could be the kinds of trials that Bertrand Russell developed during the period of the Vietnam War, namely a group of recognized jurists, Telford Taylor, people of that standing. There's a Judge Petit who's with the European Economic Community, the High Court there. People who could be brought together to look at the evidence, and their simple moral authority in terms of how they read the evidence as to whether or not Waldheim was a criminal and the magnitude of his involvement, I think that would establish the record. And once that is done, I think it will be for the Austrian people to determine whether Waldheim may be called upon to step down from his office.
How do you feel about the bill in Congress? I think it's in a Rodino subcommittee that would bar him entering this country.
I have no question that that's altogether a legal basis for doing that. The statutes call for the prevention of anyone who participated in a Nazi fascist machine during World War II who lied about his involvement cannot be allowed to come into the United States.
I understand other Nazis of World War II who admitted their participation and were not before held for war trials have entered the political field, but there was no lie in the background.
Well, I think that had more to do with, in a sense, emergency situations, which I would not in any way justify, in which our own government, including the CIA, and I say that, Bill Casey just spoke at our annual meeting, and Bill Casey's a good friend of mine, the head of the CIA, but in the early post-war days, the concern about preventing communist expansion throughout Europe was so great that the United States operated on the theory of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And because a number of these Nazis had extraordinary intelligence about communist subversion throughout Europe and communist plans for taking over Eastern Europe and carrying out programs against the Western allies, that Nazis were brought to this country with a view toward getting information from them that would help the United States in its counterintelligence.
Let me pick up in just a second. We'll take some calls, too. Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations, the American Jewish Committee.
I'm Owen Spann. This is Talk Radio AM 145, KPSI.
WW AM 1450, News Talk for Savannah.
Our guest, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations, the American Jewish Committee. As we get closer and closer, about 12 days away, whatever, from the presidential election in Austria. Caller Owen Spann, you're on Talk Radio with Dr. Tannenbaum.
Yes, I'm Chaim Feinberg from Albany, and I'd like to ask Dr. Tannenbaum a question of a rather large scope. During Waldheim's tenure as a Secretary General of the UN, we saw an enormous amount of anti-Israeli activity in the UN, ranging from Arafat being invited to the UN, the infamous declaration that Zionism is racism. And in light of the fact that that Moynihan, in his excellent book, A Dangerous Place, he was the UN ambassador in 74 and 75 in that crucial period, he calls openly Waldheim an anti-Semite in his book, and in direct terms. And I was wondering whether Dr. Tenenbaum feels that there is a direct connection, and whether it has been explored by Jewish organizations, between Waldheim's Nazi ideology in the war and his tenure and anti-Israeli activity that went on in the UN under his tenure.
All right, good question.
It is a very good question. My own department at the American Jewish Committee, actually several years ago, as we were trying to make sense out of the reports about Waldheim, which were not then documented, did a survey of the anti-Zionist, anti-Israeli action that took place during the period between 1971 and 82. And it is clear that some of the most anti-Israel, anti-Zionist actions did take place during that period of time. The correlation between Waldheim's Nazi background and his attitudes toward contemporary Israel is certainly worthy of very serious reflection and responses. We have made some of this material available to the UN Secretary General's office over the past months, and I think that has helped mute some of the ugly debate that has taken place now. But some of that really has to do with almost the kind of psychoanalysis. The evidence seems to be more circumstantial than factual, but it's enough to go by that that raises very serious questions about Waldheim's anti-Israel attitudes.
Although you still had in that period an explosion of third world nations, the creation of new countries, and most of them affiliating themselves with either Arab or, in many cases, the communist world. You couldn't lay that all on
Well, one of our people who represents the American government at United Nations commissions was present at the time when the Zionism racism resolution was introduced. And he, a very good Jew and a very committed Zionist, said to me, look, that action was undertaken by the Algerian president of the United Nations at the time, the General Assembly. And he and the Soviets put that together. Waldheim did not have to lift a finger. They were doing their own ideological warfare against Israel. Therefore, one must be careful in making those charges. But there's no question there is a pattern of great sympathy toward the PLO during that period of time and toward a third world anti-Israel ideology.
Did you know it at the time, or are you now sort of re-looking at the Waldheim years at the UN?
No, there were simply suspicions. I mean, the material that began to be looked into always stopped in 1941, because...
But let me pick up on that a second. Now that we're taking another look at those UN years, with Dr. Tenenbaum, Owen Spann on Talk Radio.
WTKN, the conversation station. Talk to me, we're talking Pittsburgh.
News Talk Radio, WWAM 1450.
With us, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations, the American Jewish Committee. Do you find yourself, the AJC, maybe halfway between the World Jewish Congress and Simon Wiesenthal?
No, I think we're probably three-quarters of the way in the corner of the World Jewish Congress. I do share with Simon Wiesenthal, whom I discussed this at some length when he was here, the matter of a style, method, approach. I think our style, the American Jewish Committee style, would have been somewhat different in dealing with the material. More than likely, as we've done in a number of major studies of this importance, we would have first gone through a large body of the material, would then have issued a report at the end of a period of months of investigation with our conclusions all at one time. I think part of the difficulty of coping with this now is the sense of the daily sensationalism of it, the revelation every other day of another fact. And that tends in some ways to cheapen the issue.
Just when the story starts to die down, there'll be new evidence.
It's like a daily fix, and therefore it tends to make a caricature of the issue. We would prefer to deal with it as a fundamental question of justice, where all of the evidence has been sorted out by the most competent judges and lawyers available, and then a series of recommendations are made.
All right, let's take some calls. Harold Owenspan, you're on Talk Radio with Dr. Tannenbaum.
Good morning, Doctor.
Morning.
I personally applaud what you're doing. I think anybody that commits genocide should be punished. I do think that... Or do you not think that the United States would support the Jewish position a lot more if you cleaned up your act in Israel, punished the people that were guilty of the atrocities at Deir Yassin, and wiped away the stigma that we're dealing with a country and that the American Jewish body is supporting a country that has done something very similar to what the Nazis did? They've disenfranchised and stolen from the people that were in Palestine.
Well, this is not the first time I've heard that scenario. It's almost stamped out of boilerplate. I don't want to dismiss for a moment a very deep concern that a great many of us in the Jewish community in this country, as well as in Israel, share about the fate and well-being and security of the Palestinian Arabs in the West Bank and Gaza. But the plain fact of the matter is that the scenario you describe has no relationship to the reality of what actually took place. The United Nations in 1947, and I want to go through all the details of the history, I'll be glad to send any listener some objective material on this from the United Nations itself. The United Nations in 1947 proposed the partition of Palestine between the Jewish community of Palestine and between the Palestinians then living both in Palestine as well as on the West Bank, Gaza. The Jews of Israel accepted that partition plan at great cost to themselves and built a state. The Palestinians, then joined by five Arab states, determined to carry out war, genocidal war, to destroy the entire Jewish community of Israel. That's where the problem began. And you do not serve the cause of justice or truth by rewriting that scenario. The fact remains that today, to show how the issue of justice is a great preoccupation in Israel, the Attorney General of Israel is now contesting the entire cabinet of Israel over bringing to account the head of the equivalent of the FBI in Israel to justice for giving an accounting of what happened to two Palestinians who attacked a bus and killed a number of Israelis. But the Palestinians, in the anger of the crowd, were killed. And the Attorney General is insisting on a full accounting and due process for those Palestinians who were killed. Whoever killed them are to be brought to justice. Now, are you trying to tell me that that's a genocidal nation? That means you empty terms of any of their meaning. The fact remains we are not going to help the cause of the Palestinians by resorting to that kind of guerrilla warfare, that kind of propaganda warfare. There's enough atrocities around for everybody to be held accountable. The issue for us today is to face the issues of justice and then to move on to create a society based on reconciliation, respect for human rights, and genuine mutual respect. And I would hope that we would expect that from the Christian world as much from the Jewish world.
All right, on the subject of Israel, that nation has been very quiet on the Waldheim affair. Why?
Well, in fact, it has not been that silent, Owen. There is a report out over this weekend that the Minister of Justice, at the request of Prime Minister Shimon Peres, was given the charge of looking at all of the material that has come out of the UN war crime files, as well as out of the American National Archives or the German Archives, and to render an opinion. There was a report this weekend that Minister of Justice Modai believes that there is enough evidence there to raise serious questions about the war criminal status of Waldheim, and is now calling for a full juridical investigation, which is to be made public. So that I think we're going to see much more activity coming out of this. In the United Nations itself, Israel's ambassador, Benjamin Netanyahu, has been carrying on a very vigorous campaign to have all of the 40,000 files on UN war crime, or war criminals in the UN files, made available for investigation, because it is now uncovering a great deal of information about former Nazis who's entered into other positions of high places in
other
various
than
governments,
Waldheim.
Other than Waldheim.
We'll pick up with our guest, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum. Be right back.
I'm Owen Spann. This is Talk Radio AM 145, KPSI.
You can now start an investment that earns high interest with a Zions First National Bank money market account just by picking up your telephone. So get your pencil ready for this unique financial opportunity. With a Zions money market account, your savings can earn high interest equal to the 90-day treasury bill rate. The minimum deposit is only $1,000, and your account is federally insured by the FDIC. You can also write up to 3 checks a month with no service charge, and you can apply for a Visa debit card without monthly or annual fees. And you'll feel secure because Zions Bank in Salt Lake City has a reputation for over 100 years of stability and service with no foreign loans and over $2 billion in assets. Why wait any longer? Pick up your telephone and call now, 1-800-468-2100. Operators are standing by to send you free information with no obligation about how you can open your Zions First National Bank money market account and apply for your free Visa banking card. That number again is 1-800-468-2100, 1-800-468-2100.
If you ask your doctor to recommend a calcium supplement, don't be surprised if he tells you to take... That's right, Tums. Tums antacid tablets are also rich in calcium. 2 Tums tablets give you more calcium than a whole cup of milk. So next time you're looking for a great antacid and a source of extra calcium, get the antacid thousands of doctors are recommending. Get Tums. Use only as directed.
Brighten up the inside of your home with a variety of fresh colors by taking advantage of the outstanding TruTest paint values during spring paint savings at True Value Hardware Stores. Hi, Pat Summerall to suggest you protect and beautify your home's interior with TruTest Easy Care Paint. Choose the latex flat finish for $9.98 a gallon, or get Easy Care semi-gloss formula or latex flat enamel for only $12.98 a gallon during spring paint savings until June 1st at participating True Value hardware stores and home centers.
Our guest, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations, the American Jewish Committee. Very briefly, a week from Sunday, probably Kurt Waldheim will be elected President of Austria. What then? Austria is certainly part of the Western Alliance. Will this be an embarrassment to the diplomatic corps? What then, after he is now President of Austria?
I think this will be probably the greatest moral and political crisis for Austria since the end of World War II. As I indicated earlier, I've undertaken some conversations with Austrian foreign ministry officials over the past weeks, and I've seldom seen people so anguished over what will happen. As you were saying earlier, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. They anticipate that if Waldheim wins, he will become president of the country, but he is going to run into roadblocks and rejection almost everywhere he goes. The United States government will be obligated by law to prevent his coming to this country. At least some people feel that way. Others say the law may not apply to him as a president of a country. He may be exempt from that. In any case, that remains to be seen. It certainly will create some serious problems between Austria and probably Italy, because it is clear now that Waldheim was involved with General Lehr's staff, which massacred hundreds of Italian soldiers. I cannot expect that Italy is going to take that quietly. He will have problems with the European Economic Community. Even though Chancellor Kohl came to his side, that was mainly a matter of winning support from the conservative parties in his own country by supporting the conservatives in Austria. And certainly with Israel, with whom Austria has been trying to develop some kind of relationship, it created an absolutely impossible situation. No Israeli government is going to be able to receive Kurt Waldheim, as Israel has received President von Weizsäcker or Chancellor Kohl of Germany. So I think Austria is going to be in for an exceedingly difficult time. It is not beyond the rule, the realm of possibility, that if the evidence becomes available that shows, unarguably, that Waldheim was personally involved as a war criminal, if in fact he committed atrocities, that he may be called upon to resign from his office after his election.
After the election. Let's take some calls. Kay Owen Spanier on Talk Radio, Dr. Tannenbaum. Okay. Anybody there?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I want to ask Mr. Tannenbaum, why is it so important to the World Jewish Congress that Mr. Waldheim not to be the president of Austria? And why didn't they object when he was elected the president of the United Nations, the head of the United Nations?
Didn't understand the first part of the question.
Pardon?
Would you repeat the first part of the question?
Why is it so important to the World Jewish Congress that Mr. Waldheim not to be the president of Austria when they didn't object to him when he was the head of the...
Secretary General of the United Nations, all right. Why is the World Jewish Congress up in arms now?
Well, first of all, as everyone knows who reads the press, Mr. Waldheim presented himself to the United Nations as an anti-Nazi. He denied that he had any involvement whatsoever in Nazi activity, certainly Nazi attacks against the Yugoslav partisans and against the Greeks. In his official autobiography, which was made available around the time that he became, after he was in office for several years, but in his official autobiography that was made available to the United Nations, he said that his military career came to an end in 1941 when he was wounded on the Russian front. Well, it turns out that he lied. That is, he lied to the international community. None of us knew. I knew Kurt Waldheim briefly when I served on a United Nations Commission on Food and Population, and I just had some brief encounter with him. He was presented as a staunch anti-Nazi. He was introduced to me in that way. So that there was no evidence at that time.
Why didn't the Yugoslavs make their move then? They've had these files for 40 years.
Well, there are all kinds of speculations, and they are exactly that. We will not know until the Yugoslavs give up the ghost. One of the reasons why the Yugoslavs apparently have not gotten into this issue is the fear is that if they make available the information regarding Waldheim, it will open up questions that have broken that community into violent, bloody disputes. Croatians were deeply involved in the Nazi military machine and the Ustashi party. Croatians killed Serbs, Serbs killed Croatians. It has taken 40 years to put that country together since the end of World War II. The present government is not interested in reopening those old wounds. They're afraid the country will simply fall apart. That's one of the reasons. Other speculations is that Waldheim made a deal with the Yugoslav government that after the war he testified against General Lehr and his colleagues, and that as a result of that he did plea bargaining, that he would not be touched if he testified against his fellow Nazi officers. Whatever the real reason, Yugoslavia will be under considerable pressure even after the election to give up their internal memorandum, which has chapter and verse on exactly what Waldheim did during World War II.
We'll pick up with our guest, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum. I'm Owen Spann. This is Talk Radio AM 145, KPSI.
WWAM 1450, News Talk for Savannah.
In a few days, we'll know who the new president of Austria will be. Probably Kurt Waldheim. With us, Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations of the American Jewish Committee. Bill Owenspan, you're on talk radio.
Doctor?
Yes, sir.
I have a phrase here that I'd like to have, and Russia was our ally during the Second World War, and right after the Second World War, they become our enemy, and a lot of things happened during that period of time. Here's another thing. How do we explain to our children about how Ulm, which is in the southern half of Germany, was destroyed, homes, residential areas, and everything? And another thing that we'd have to try to explain that was terrible that happened here in the United States was what happened to the Japanese Americans that were put in camps in the northern part of the United States where their land was confiscated and things like that? And I think if we're going to prosecute people, there'd be no end to it. I think after 40 years, I think enough is enough. I think the whole thing should be just put on the cool side.
Well, I know that feeling. I've heard it many times. Let me just say a couple things. It's a larger discussion. It really involves questions of moral theology as well as justice concerns and political concerns. Look, what kind of world do you want to live in? If the message that the governments of the world, including the great democracies at the center of which is the United States, give out a message that you can be a murderer, a killer, a criminal, and get away with it, even become the head of the United Nations, there's no accountability, you are in fact assuring that there will be encouragement given to every cheap demagogue around the world to carry out the same kind of program. I don't think it's any accident that the failure of the Western world to really come to terms with the Nazi horrors until recent years, in fact, became the darkest legacy which gave encouragement not only to Libya's Gaddafi, who feels that he can murder Americans, to the Shiite Muslims, who can kill 230-some Marines in Lebanon and get away with it. There won't be any accountability for that. For Idi Amin, who killed a 500,000 black Christians in Uganda, and the world didn't say a word about it. If the notion is, if the governing policy is turn the other cheek, love your enemies, you can be assured that that ethic is going to create a relativistic notion in which everybody can do whatever he wants against anybody else and get away with it. Because the world's going to be amnesic about it, as you were suggesting.
Doctor?
Yes.
But in most cases, in a lot of cases over the world, you've had generals become president of the United States. You've had high people become controllers in Israel and everything like it there. And I think we could all be accused of something in our lifetime during a war where we're ordered and told to do something, which we do. What I'm saying is I think we're overpowering the thought of one man.
Well, we could look at Vietnam and incidents like My Lai, and there would have been many My Lais. And we're not too proud of that. I think that's what the caller's saying.
Well, there are several different issues. General Eisenhower became president of the United States because he fought a defensive war against an evil enemy of Nazism. He did not embark on an aggressive war for expansionist purpose for the United States. Moral theology defends a war of last resort in order to uphold justice and basic human rights. The general fought that and acquitted himself as a president of the United States. There's a difference between that and an Adolf Eichmann, who set about systematically using the entire machinery, the intellectual scientific community of Germany, to set up war machines whose purpose was nothing other than to bring about the total destruction of the Jewish people, and in the process destroyed 39 million other people on the continent. You must deal with that as an assault on the basic foundations of Western civilization, on the basic foundations of Jewish and Christian values in Western civilization. If you don't understand that, then I'm afraid you're laying the foundation for the repetition of those evils.
We're out of time, but I wish we could do more. We will see. We both feel that, indeed, Kurt Waldheim will be the new president of Austria, and the story will not end on that election day. Am I correct?
I think you're absolutely right, Owen.
I thank you, sir. Thank you for being with us. Dr. Mark Tannenbaum, Director of International Relations, American Jewish Committee. In the next hour, there are some 12 million Americans involved in phobias, and many of them have been prisoners. You cannot leave your house. You cannot fly in an airline. You can't do anything.
A doctor's going to say all past knowledge may be absolutely incorrect, and there may be a physical problem with you that can be cured very simply. Owen Spann on Talk Radio.
News Talk Radio, WWAM 1450.
Hi, this is Connie Selica. Right now is a very special time in a teenager's life. You're not a kid anymore. I know it can be tough. You're trying to do the best you can, but sometimes the pressures can get to be too much for you and your friends. That's why I'm asking you, please, don't drink and drive. There are lots of great ways to have a good time. Breaking the law isn't one of them. To make sure you get home safely, please, don't drink at high school parties, after the game, on prom night when everything should be so special, or even at the drive-in on an ordinary Saturday night. Don't drink and drive. It's up to you. When you get behind the wheel, you're risking your life and someone else's. That's a very careless, selfish thing to do. Please don't drink and drive. You can live without it. Remember, it's up to you.
A message from this station and the Educational Institute of the American Hotel and Motel Association.
You might call me a world traveler, and indeed, I've explored new worlds where no man has gone before. I've voyaged far into the future, and I've seen a world you can